Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here with my boy and co-host, Naruto Perdomo. Fire episode for you guys today. We got a lot of NBA coming up, first round predictions, what we've seen through first few games. We're recording on a Tuesday before those games start, so the takes might be a little outdated, but definitely try to keep everything at least a little relevant. But the NCAA just came out and say that like they're proposing the rule change of schools being able to directly pay the players for play. And you and I already knew about this just through like our connections and who we've been talking to on the pod. And when I try to tell people like how it would work, people don't believe me, or people didn't believe me, but now it's like kind of full effect. So just real quick before we get into the playoffs, I want to hear what you're thinking about it.
Yeah, bro. I mean, in an episode that didn't drop, we interviewed Val Ackerman, who is the former WNBA commissioner and Big East commissioner currently. And she kind of talked about how, you know, revenue sharing amongst like players and stuff like that, right? And now that we're bringing up this pay to play stuff, and it's all coming back full circle. And I think it's fair, right? But what Zach LaPute brought up is the contract thing. That's where, if we're talking about these schools sharing the revenue with their players and paying them directly, we have to talk about like contracts. Because then, like your point in that episode, if you're getting paid like that and by the school, you're an employer of the school. You're technically not a student athlete at that point, right? You're making millions. These players are already making millions of dollars. And like you said, when are they ever in school? So, you know, that's something to think about, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, these schools are already making millions and billions as it is. So, you know, sharing it with the athletes that are on the court, really, you know, putting the school out there or playing for the school, that's what's important at the end of the day.
No, yeah. But real quick, what I was thinking is, bro, schools are already doing this. So I think the rule just allows there to be more clarity and it to be less like chaotic with NIL. Mm-hmm. But, bro, like, if you're in, like, the college basketball landscape, I'm not saying we're, like, fully media members, but we know, like, the inside, we're hearing, like, some of the numbers that these players are getting. And I was looking at something that's public. It says teams with $10 million rosters. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's, mm-hmm. like, Arkansas, BYU, Duke. All these schools are just giving out bags. So now with this rule change, it's just going to allow there to be, like, this is how it is. You're making this much and you're making this much, nothing under the table. We're just going to put it out there public. So I think this is a good thing for the NCAA, make it a little more structured, but that's not why we're here today. Let's get into our playoff predictions and talk about the NBA. All right, playoffs here. It's really been good basketball so far. So like I said, we're recording on a Tuesday before the Pacers series, the Thunder series, and the Lakers series. Those will be played tonight. But before we talk specifically about like one series, I want to hear like if you've noticed anything special or wanted to shout something out before we dive into a specific series.
Well, one thing I want to something I've been thinking about is the Lakers this year, because I'm a big LeBron. I love LeBron. Luka, too. I'm a big Luka fan as well. Ever since, you know, but even before he got to the Lakers when he was with Dallas, I used to tune in to all his games. And, you know, I used to watch J.J. Redick's podcast all the time as well. And obviously, too, like my boy Cal Connolly works for the Lakers. So, you know, personally invested within that team as well. But for me, I just wanted to, not that my shout out means anything, but just point out J.J. Redick, like he had a great year, you know, for the Lakers. It was first time, you know, coaching at any level. You know, I think he mentioned in his podcast, he coached his, you know,
son's
his kids. AAU team. You know what I mean? And now he's coaching for the Los Angeles Lakers, which is the best brand in basketball. You know what I mean? And he dealt with a lot this year with the fires in California. Midseason trade with Luka Doncic and AD, right? Bronny and LeBron and that whole saga, and just, you know, the media scrutiny that he got when he first got the job, man. Like people were telling the Lakers they were bugging for hiring him. you know, they ranked JJ Redick as the 30th best coach in the NBA, which, you know, he's the new head coach and he has no experience. So you don't blame the media members for that. But still, you have to take account that he has some basketball knowledge. And it's clear this whole year that he does. He's gotten his group to play hard. You know, he's had to change the team dynamics around during midseason trades. And then when a trade got rescinded and he's having to figure all this stuff on the fly and build Austin Reeves into a new role. So shout out JJ Redick, man. They was giving him a lot of hate, you know, before the season started. And I think no matter what happens for the Lakers this year, you take away like, nah, this is a win for the Lakers, like no matter what happens. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. One of my early season takes that I was pretty confident about, it didn't pan out like this, but I was saying JJ Redick, coach of the year, because like you, I was listening to all his pods. And, bro, I'm tired of people bringing up, and this kind of ties into the playoffs, I'm tired of people bringing up this, like, experience talk. Obviously, in some scenarios, like, we'll talk about it, it does matter, but when you listen to JJ talk about basketball, it's clear, yes, he can step into year one, a hectic situation, and be able to coach a talented group like that and get them to where they are right now. So I wasn't, like, 30th coach. Like, that was crazy to me.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, bro, he literally, like, JJ, he carries a chip on his shoulder. Like, you know, I watched a lot of the Lakers, like, they have, like, extra, like, a YouTube extras page where they have, like, you know, inside into the locker room or practices. Right. And the opening meeting with the Lakers on media day was like JJ Redick saying, you guys got the 30th best coach in the NBA, a 40-year-old starting at small forward and a beat up, you know, and a beat up, you know, four man or five man in Anthony Davis. You know, we're just going to attack every practice with intensity and get better. We're not going to worry about the outside noise. You know what I mean? So definitely got a shout out JJ Redick for all he's done, you know, this year.
Yo, did you see Magic's tweet the other day about him?
No.
Bro, after they lost, Magic said JJ had a great, great year coaching, but he clearly didn't have his team prepared for this matchup or something like that. And it was kind of – I mean, Magic has his own opinions. He runs the team and stuff like that, but that was kind of immature to me. It's game one, so already, like, there's a lot of uncertainty going to a playoff round, especially against the Timberwolves. And then, like, we'll see if JJ's ready for this matchup coming up tonight, because I think he's going to have a lot of, like, little tweaks that he saw in game one and it's going to help pay off. But I don't want to talk too much about the Lakers and JJ. I want to start just because it's going to be quick, but the Thunder versus Grizzlies series. And I don't even want to talk too much about it just because – we know what happened. It was a 50-point game early in the third quarter. But Bill Simmons had this idea that if, like, in the playoffs, we pick a certain number and say it's, like, 60. If a team loses by that much, like, already they go down 2-0 or something like that. He was kind of joking, but I do think in a series like this, I don't think there's any chance the Grizzlies even steal a game. So I was wondering what you think about that.
I don't agree with that. I think they're going to steal one game at least. And I don't know about Bill Simmons with that take, but he's probably joking a little bit.
But. Nah, he was definitely joking, but I was saying, like, Tomas Izalo, the interim head coach, like, he's not doing anything. They were just out there. They had nothing for what the Thunder were running. I'm seeing stuff that the Thunder were running since game one. And they would just look lost out there. So that's also another reason why they had 36 points at halftime. I don't think the series is going to be close at all, bro.
I wanted to bring this up. We were talking about JJ, though. Like, bro, at the end of the day, like, the NBA is such a players league, bro. Like, I'm going to give you a perfect example of this, right? So we went to go see Duncan in Miami, right? Went to the game, all that stuff. And I seen him after. And during this stretch where we've seen Duncan, the Miami Heat were on a 5-game losing streak, right? Not doing well. It was after the Jimmy trade, whatever. So he comes out to talk to us. He's like, hey, he's like, yeah, you know, tough game. He played well himself. He had 15 ball that game. Like, he was killing. But he was like, you know, the competitor as he is, he was like, oh, man, like, you know, vibes aren't good in the locker room right now. But, you know, we talked about it, you know, whatever it may be, you know, we're just talking, like, basically just saying, like, how can we turn the season around is what Duncan was saying. I was like, well, what was the message from the coaching staff? And he was like, well, Coach Bolster couldn't really like say much in that, you know, in that meeting. Like he just told us like, hey, we got to be better. But at the end of the day, it's on the players for us to play harder and play better. And, you know, Miami Heat, you know, they're in the playoffs now and they were looking pretty good against the Cavs. They were down in that game one. It was close until Ty Jerome went off. But I made this point to say, like, bro, I know that the coaching staff has to make the adjustments, but at the end of the day, Grizzlies do have a talented roster. So I feel like they are going to steal one, bro, just based off of, like, Ja's going to kill, bro. You know Ja's going to kill when they come back in Memphis, bro. You know what I mean?
We got Dort, bro. I don't know.
Nah, bro. He played bad because it was 420. That's why.
Bro, I just don't – this is my last take, but I just don't think, like, the way Ja plays is – the worst for like the it's a perfect matchup for the Thunder. Like, we have rim protectors and we have perimeter defenders, so someone that's like Jaws strictly at mostly at the rim, I should say, we got iHeart and Chet. So either way, like, even if Triple J is spacing the floor, Chet is out there, but iHeart is still protecting the rim. So it's like, when is Ja really gonna — and I know he's a MVP caliber player, so he could still have a game, good game, but I got the Thunder in four. Let me hear your predictions.
Thunder and five.
But since you're not hating, but like a little slight on my team, I want to talk about your team, bro.
Let's do it.
I mean, the Knicks Pistons series, and it was advertised to be a great series, gonna be a battle. It's tied 1-1. We just saw game two last night, and I'm not gonna lie, I think that I'm gonna say my prediction now. Actually, I'm gonna wait till after the discussion, but I think the Pistons are better. I'm not saying that they're going to win the series, but I just think that they have people for Brunson. And people are saying, like, Asar's got a match, like, minute match with Brunson. One, I don't think that's possible because he fouls a lot. But two, I don't know if you've been thinking the same, but Schroeder is, like, doing his thing on Brunson. Like, obviously, Brunson is a great player. He's going to get his, but Schroeder's making it hard, bro, and – like, what was Brunson, 12 for 28, 12 for 27 last night?
And hold on, bro.
No, you can look it up. I have more things to say. So
Go ahead.
Like, experience showed, and this is what I was saying earlier, like, experience showed in the game one. The Pistons controlled the whole game. They let up a 21-0 run in the fourth quarter. That's the storyline. And Cade averaged, like, 38-5 in the regular season against the Knicks, and he didn't have it in game one. But I saw it in game two, like, there wasn't that nerves. There wasn't that, like, in-between stage with Cade, he was like, I'm from bucket one, I'm at them. And also, Asar was like, all right, I kind of picking up some things on Brunson. But, like, the Knicks are scaring me because, like, Mikal is not bringing much for y'all. So I was just kind of curious. I'm throwing a lot of shade at your team right now, bro.
I'm waiting. Nah. Also, on the real, it's definitely going to be a great series. I mean, you know, I watched the whole Knicks game with my boy Griffin last night. And
he was hating too, wasn't he?
Nah, you know what? He actually, I can't say that. But he had, for that particular game, he had some interest, I'll just say. You could put two and two together for that. But he was definitely rooting for the Knicks in for the second half. But in the fourth quarter and third quarter, when Brunson was, bro, there's a couple points I want to take, because you are right, because, like, Schroeder is giving him run for his money. He's making it physical and he's playing well on offense too, so he's making it hard on, like, as he's making it hard on the Knicks as a whole. But in my opinion, bro, in that fourth quarter, bro, ain't nobody was stopping Brunson, bro. He missed two shots at the end. He missed where, like, he missed his pin down to, like, maybe like cut it to, like, 1 point. He missed that, and then he missed, like, a last second buzzer beater.
Yeah.
At the end. So he was really 12 for 25. And I'm living with that, bro, because he had 37, and down the stretch, he was being physical. He fouled out Asar Thompson. And I know you said he'd be fouling, but regardless, Asar Thompson was like, oh, I'm not worried about this matchup, but sat him down with a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter. He was being he stopped settling when Schroeder was on him. He was attacking him every time. Malik Beasley didn't have none for him. You know what I mean? So nobody was stopping Brunson. What I'm really worried about, like you're saying, is Mikal, because at the end of the day, yeah, Cade was killing, but that game was in the 90s, bro. That game was in the 90s, and we had so many opportunities down the stretch to win that game with Mikal open shots. And like, I didn't mind all the shots he took. Like, I think he took one like pull up three in transition. Like, right. I don't mind that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and he's a good player for us, bro. And I want OG to be, you know, keep being aggressive. Like, I think, like, yeah, Cade can do his numbers, but same thing with, you know what I'm saying, Dennis Schroeder. OG's gonna make it difficult on Cade. He's gonna be physical with him. And what I really need to see, I just need to see Cat have a series game one to whatever finish, however many games we finish off the Pistons. Like, you got to play at like an elite MVP level for us to win that game. Cause bro, I can't, we're not going to win a game with him. Yeah. Having to. Yeah.
Cause I, after game one, that was one thing that I like was thinking about is the Pistons really have no match for Cat. Mm-hmm. If they're going to throw like Tobias Harris on Cat should try to dominate that matchup. And he was doing that all year. Like when he would mm-hmm. have smaller defenders or even just someone he was better than, it's like, nah, it's my turn to shine. He was playing at an all-star level, but you can't get into game two on your home floor, and now you give the Pistons home court advantage because Cat 10 points. But the Mikal Bridges trade, like in game one, I don't even think he closed a lot of it. And that's a trade that I'm looking at. Four first round unprotected, one protected pick, one first round protected pick, a pick swap, two second round picks. That trade might like be in trouble, bro, if he doesn't pick it up. But the last thing I want to say that might be scary for y'all is the Pistons aren't even really playing good, bro. Like, Kate. Well,
we're playing good defense too, though.
Bro, I'm watching Beasley and Hardaway. They were 1-for-14 from three yesterday. Like, and these are good looks that they're getting,
bro. But the thing is, like, we're matching. So Detroit Pistons are being like physical with us and we're missing shots, but we're being as physical with them and they're missing shots. Like every time, like I think Paul George or Kobe talks about this, right? Like being able to like take physicality, but then like still be able to like hit a shot or something like that. You know what I mean? And you know, play fast and slow yourself down and be able to hit a shot. So no, it's like, you know what I'm saying? So like Brunson, bro, you can see it on Brunson's face. Like, his face was red as hell. You know what I'm saying? Because he was getting hit on all those post-ups. But, you know, we're making it difficult on them. And, yeah, they're maybe missing some open looks. But that's bound to happen, bro. Yeah, you know what I mean? Sure. You're going to make everything. You know what I mean?
It's kind of fitting. This is the last thing I'll say. It's kind of fitting that it's the Pistons versus Knicks. Like, those teams are historically known to be, like, yeah. Bruiser teams, get after, play physical. And both of the games have been, like, low-scoring, competitive. Both games, there's been like some chippiness to it. So I want to hear your prediction first before I say mine.
Knicks and six, man.
Knicks and six. I got Knicks and seven. I'm gonna give the Knicks the slight, but I said I think the Pistons are better just because I don't think that. I mean, you said OG, but I don't think anyone can stop Cade. And then when he's dishing too, if they start making shots, I think it's gonna be difficult. But I agree with you. I got the Knicks, but I just got it in seven. But let's go back to a number 1 versus 8 seed. We got the Cavaliers versus the Heat. And I don't really want to say too much about this series, too, because I don't think it's competitive. Well, it's competitive. It's the Heat culture, all that. But I just think the Cavs are really deep. And Ty Jerome, like, I'm looking at his pull-up shooting percentages, like, amongst league leaders that work with – I think his trainer is Chris Berkeley.
Berkeley,
that's what I'm at. It's definitely showing, bro, because his jump from the past few years to this year has been crazy. And we talk about it often, like, opportunity matters. And the same thing on the Heat side. Like, they get rid of Jimmy Butler, and now Tyler Hero's looking like he's back solidifying his name in the NBA. Not that it was lost, but he's showing, like, I'm still, like, all-star level. And then also who I want to give a shout-out to, Davion Mitchell. I've been a fan of his just because, like, kind of player comparison – throughout my career, people say I play like him, but he's getting the opportunity and he's solidified himself to be like, I'm a role playing guy moving forward. So I'm gonna just say my prediction now, but I got the Cavs in four. Another sweep I got, but talk to me.
You know, obviously a little bit of bias here because, you know, I want to root for my boy Duncan. but you know, realistically, Yo, you watching this, bro? Apologize. Realistically, Cavs in five. hopefully y'all get one at the crib in Miami. But yeah, I feel like Cavs got it rolling right now. I mean, Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, you know, they're playing a lot through Mobley this year, bro, which is kind of different from last year. You know, last year it was like D-Mitch heavy, which is not a bad thing, but, you know, just getting Mobley more involved in the offense has just helped everyone's game for the Cavs. And the thing with Kenny Atkinson, bro, so yeah, he trained with Chris Brickley, but he was on the staff of the Warriors last year. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, Ty Jerome was on the Warriors last year too. So Ty Jerome,
I moved mid-year. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ty Jerome, like Kenny Atkinson probably seen Ty Jerome like killing in practice, seen the work that he puts in, and they signed him and brought him to the Cavs and was like, yo, you're going to play like minutes here. Like you're going to be the guy off the bench for us. And he has all this confidence because he has a coach that believes in him. And now he's killing in the playoffs, bro. Probably won them that game. So yeah, but realistically, we'll probably say Cavs in five. Hopefully my boy Debo has a good series. He had a good game one. I don't know what's up with what's his face? D-Mitch pushing him like that. That was crazy. But yeah, he wasn't going for that. He was like, get the fuck out of here. Okay, touch me.
Nah, I respect that because he definitely could have took the bitch round and just been like, D-Mitch just pushed me. I got to just eat that. But he stood up for himself. I respect it. But, yeah, I don't think that series is too competitive. But you said, like, last year they were playing through D-Mitch. And I think this is something that D-Mitch kind of worked on is I'm going to let DG do a little bit of his thing. I'm going to let Mobley do his thing a little bit. But when the playoffs come around, I was looking, D-Mitch averaging like 28, 5, and 5 through his career during the playoffs. So he already knows in the back of his mind, like when it gets real, I can just turn that mode on and get to my bucket getting. But he's just letting those guys get comfortable. So, but we set our prediction with that one. Let's move to, I'm going to go number 3, Lakers versus number 6, Timberwolves. And like we said, that game is being played tonight as our recording. But game one was crazy. Timberwolves played extremely well. I think they shot 50% from three or something like that. McDaniels was 3 for 3. Randall was 4 for 6. Nas Reed was 6 for 9 from three. They were all shooting really well. And obviously that's not going to happen again. Like teams don't just shoot 50% from three in the playoffs. But the Lakers, like they were in a lot of like rotations, just giving up wide open threes. And you think about it, why is that happening? And it's what people were saying from day one when they made that trade is the defense might not like stand up, and they were doing good for a while. Like initially when the trade first happened, they were ranked amongst league leaders in defensive categories. But now we're starting to see, I'm seeing a lot of possessions where Luke is ending up on Ant, and that's bad for business. If you're JJ Redick and the staff, you can't really try to make Luka guard Ant, and Ant's going to take advantage of that. He's just one move going by him, finding shooters wide open. And then on the flip side, it's like Luka played his ass off. I don't remember how much he finished with. I think like
40,
37, 38, something like that. And I'm still thinking, like, how are the Lakers going to consistently score against this team? Because any lineup that they were putting out there, there's defenders. And one thing people not talking about, Chris Finch, He made a little bit of adjustment. A lot of teams, when Luka's getting ball screens, they like hard hedge or they double. But he just had Luka play or Rudy playing a drop. So now you're forcing Luka to make like these in between twos, which obviously he can make those. But it's way different than, you know, getting Austin Reeves wide open threes, getting him going, or, you know, getting alleys to Jackson Hayes, making them feel better. When it's in the drop, it makes it a lot tougher, especially because you got like McDaniels or Nikhil Alexander-Walker like trailing the screen, and it looked good. Like Luka was still getting to his, but that's kind of the recipe that people were talking about last year during the playoffs is like, yeah, let Luka go for 40, but his supporting cast has to do something. And it's kind of similar right now. And obviously, like LeBron's going to go crazy one of these games. AR is going to have one of his games, but it just looks scary. Like I'm seeing the Timberwolves put on 5-man lineups that, all like, wow, you're switching on and you're getting Ant. So it's just tough.
Nah, for sure. It's definitely going to be a tough series for the Lakers. You know, my thing, I would probably say that game one, I saw a comment on YouTube. Game one, it looked like Austin Reeves and LeBron were playing their first playoff game because, like, they just didn't play well. And, I wouldn't go that far, but it was still kind of a funny comment. And I say that because I have real confidence. I mean, you obviously should in LeBron just turning it up in the rest of the series. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, got punched in the mouth. Like, LeBron's going to figure out how to beat the Timberwolves, like, most experienced player in the NBA. Like, you can't give LeBron a coverage that he hasn't seen before. And, you know, with Luka and playing the drop, you know, they probably just can't settle for those mid ranges anymore, bro. He's going to have to try to find a way to, you know, with McDaniels using the screen, get him off balance, you know what I'm saying, and find looks from the three. Yeah. But a matchup that I was interested before the season or before the series started was there's a lot of talk about, like, Austin Reeves being, like, the best third option in the NBA. Like, and I'm like, yeah, like, he's a bucket. Like, I like Austin Reeves' game. Like, you know, he has some jiggy, you know, he can shoot it. He makes plays, like, real good player. But this series, I was like, wait, hold on. Like, they could throw Nickeil Alexander-Walker on him, right? Like, that in of itself, like, that alone, excuse me, is what I meant to say. That alone should, like, be like, okay, they're not throwing, like, Mike Conley on him, bro. They're throwing, like, a legit defender on him,
yeah,
right? So, and Randall, you know, guarding LeBron too, like, you know, they kind of got the same body type too. You know, it's a good matchup. But like I said, you got LeBron and Luka leading the way for the Lakers. Like, they're gonna figure out the Timberwolves and how to best attack them. So I definitely got confidence in the Lakers, though. Mm. But you're right about the rotations, though, 100%. Like, yeah, they made, like, however many threes they made, what, like 18 or 19, whatever. But, like, they were getting so many open looks just based off of, you know, them moving the ball. Yeah. So it's like, how does JJ counteract that? Like, how does he not prevent them from getting any open looks or preventing them to get those looks a little bit tougher? You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
And one last thing, like, people were giving a lot of flack on the Julius Randle trade when it wasn't looking too good for the Timberwolves, and, like, it's on the flip side, Cat's an all-star, Julius Randle looked like shit. But now, like, the tables are – obviously, Cat's still playing good, so I'm not saying that. But Julius Randle's starting to get his swag back. And
still early. Playoffs. Huh? It's still early, bro. As a Knicks fan, bro.
Nah, I feel
Knicks
that, fan. But I'm saying more, like, just as a regular season. I'm not even worried about that right now. But since he came back from his injury, averaging 18-7-5, shooting 50-40 from the field. So he's, like, kind of found his spot in the Timberwolves system, playing off an Ant. It looks good right now, but
yeah,
like you said, like, sometimes playoffs people just crumble. My prediction, I got the Timberwolves in six.
What you got? Lakers in seven.
Lakers in seven. Heard you. All right, we're going to go back to the East, and this is my favorite series to at least just talk about. We got number four Pacers versus number five Bucks. And did you see the thing Dame and Tyrese arguing?
Gotta put the clip up.
They're talking crazy. He don't usually get like that. So is he coming back for tonight? Oh,
just
it's
cleared.
Up. It is up. But few things I wanted, just big points. The trade Chris Middleton for Kuzma looks bad, bro. You can't have a zero stat line to Tony Snell. That's not good for business, Kyle. But I mean, Chris Middleton probably chilling in Cancun just laughing at them. Like, I was a big time performer in the playoffs last year. If you remember, against the Pacers, when Giannis was out, when Dame was out, he was the one, like, holding the fort at least a little bit together. And now they got Kuzma and he's not doing shit. But my big takeaway is Giannis is out after this year, bro. I don't see them winning or making this a competitive series. Like, the Pacers have had their number since last year's regular season, the playoffs, this regular season. And I can't say this playoffs, but as the game won. But I just curious what you saw. And I want to talk to you about something that we can both kind of take away for, you know, we're aspiring coaches, but I want to hear your thoughts.
So definitely saw the – I was saying when you were talking about the Dame and Tyrese, like, clip it. You got to put the clip of them arguing in post. Because it was hilarious, bro, because Dame was like, and I'll beat your ass at the end. But definitely excited for Dame to come back. Also, one of my guys, love Dame, like, in his game and stuff like that, and always love, like, watching him play ever since I was young. And I'm excited for him to come back. You know, I'm not really expecting him to go crazy tonight because he hasn't played in a little bit and the blood clots are very serious. You know, so I am kind of worried, you know, about them rushing him. I don't know if he's getting rushed, but I don't know what's behind the medical, you know, process of that. But I don't know if you're watching the Celtics documentary.
I heard about it.
Yeah, bro, it's fire. It's on HBO Max. Real quick, but Reggie Lewis, legend for the Boston Celtics, he had like a heart defect or something like that. And basically a second doctor cleared him to play and he ended up passing away in practice or something like that, bro.
Damn.
Yeah. So like stuff like that just worries me a little bit. Obviously, knock on wood, you don't want that stuff to happen. But with Dame, like, really excited for him to come back, see what he looks like. You know, not expecting really much in game two, but him coming back is going to make it a very interesting series. And with, you know, you talking about if they lose, Giannis might be out. Man, then the question is, who's the next team? Because I heard Paul Pierce talking about this. The Thunder have a boatload of picks that they could just throw at any superstar player and just be like, yo, here's all these picks. Come hoop with us, bro.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Don't get my hopes up, bro. We don't need that right now. I'm focused on this year. But you mentioned earlier, and I didn't want to cut you off, but how it's like I'm not trying to like argue your take because that's valid. That it is a players' league, but there's some things that coaches are doing in the league right now that might go like under the table that we're not really seeing. For example, like Steve Kerr's offense. We'll talk about it, but obviously Steph Curry's gravitational pull is a big reason, but part of why Steph Curry is having the years that he's had is because of Steve Kerr's offense. And part of why, like, the Pacers lead the league in effective field goal percentage is because of Rick Carlisle. And I'm watching, like, why is – I'm not seeing anything special. I'm not a big Tyrese guy. Like, I'm not big on Pascal Siakam. I'm like, how is their offense so good? So I did a little film study, but one, like, their secondary offense, like, not fully transitioned, but kind of in that, like, half court
transition.
They're really good because they get into a lot of like slip screens and five out offenses from the start, and that's already kind of challenging, especially in a series against the Bucks where they got Brooke Lopez as like kind of a slow center. But I picked up on three sets, and first one Nembhard will bring it up on one side and he'll pass to Tyrese on the other side and he'll ghost that, like pass instantly into a ghost. And that's already causing a little bit of trouble because Tyrese can get downhill if you fuck up that like ghost switch a little bit. So he can get downhill. But if you're kind of guarding it, Tom or Miles Turner or whoever the big is in at the point, he'll come up and set like a odd angle. And since Tyrese is already getting downhill, it causes Brooke Lopez, who's in that drop, it's like an easy floater. Or if he steps up, I just got that dump down. So that's set number one, and that's just off the break, bro. It's not even like a called set. It's just, all right, we don't have none. Instantly, let's get to the ball. Tyrese ghosted, odd angle, let's work. And the next set that I really like is they'll do like a staggered double big screen. So Siakam and Miles Turner will both come up. Siakam, the first guy, he'll set the screen like here, and Miles Turner will be like here. So Tyrese will pass to the second big, the farther away big. And instead of it being like a ball screen, Siakam's setting like an off ball. The first big, Siakam, is setting an off ball for Tyrese to come off of it. And that's already tricky because the four either has to switch or show a little bit. But if he switches, now you have Pascal in an advantage. But also, now Tyrese is coming off of DHO with the second big.
Yeah.
And this is what I don't know if you see, like Tyrese always gets skip passes. It's because he's coming off that DHO, and after Miles Turner hands it off, he's rolling. So it usually causes like that opposite corner to kind of help.
Yep.
And Tyrese is just dialing it up. And they do another set that I don't really want to go too much into, but it's like a flare screen. And it's just little things like that that most teams aren't really seeing. Like you said, it's a players' league. So we're seeing a lot of like just high ball screen, let Luka, Shea, Giannis get downhill, play their game. But Rick Carlisle, I think, noticed after year one and two with Tyrese that he's not the best ISO player. What he's great at is reading like two-on-one advantages or just any advantage situation. So that's why Tyrese, like I'm seeing a lot of his games, he's getting to 10 assists before he gets to 10 points. And just like Rick Carlisle's got everything lined up for him and Nembhard. Nembhard, I don't know if you've been watching any of his film, but
he's
been moving bigs out the way and some crazy shit. Like, he's not even strong. It's just, like, those little reads. Like, as soon as you get a little off balance, I'm going to use my shoulder and you're gone. So I got Pacers in seven. I said it's not competitive, but it's definitely competitive. I got Pacers in seven. What you got?
I probably got Pacers in six.
Pacers in six. All right. Next series, this is another great series. We got number two Rockets versus number seven Warriors. I just went on a little rant, so I don't know if you want to start the discussion, but I want to talk about that series.
Definitely another, you know, physical series. You could tell just by the way they're playing Steph Curry, funnel him to the rim. You know what I'm saying? And just hitting him, like, they're switching every off-ball screen. And as soon as they switch, they're just hitting him right in the chest or making him work on defense. Like, I saw a clip with Jabari Smith just pushing him and, like, basically trying to get an advantage in the post on him. And, like, yeah, he could just seal him real quick, but Jabari gave him, like, a real, like forearm real quick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just making Curry work. But he was killing, bro. And, you know, I think the Warriors are going to win this series. I think the Warriors probably in six or seven. I'll say seven, Warriors in seven. But the reason why I say that, bro, is just Stephen Curry is one of the most, like, watching him play basketball is an amazing thing, bro. Like, people who, when he's done playing, bro, and, you know, we got kids or something like that, and we're trying to explain what watching Steph Curry was like, no one will really understand until they're watching him now, bro, because the way he shoots, like, literally at any point in the game, it's just like, how do you make that shot? And it's just like, Kevin Harlan is like, that shot was not geometrically possible. That should not have gone in.
And he's watching it with a friend, and she was like, nah, that's AI.
Bro, it's so true, bro, because it's like, the plays he makes is crazy, bro. And a question I have about this series, or I guess if they win this series and the Warriors keep winning, what does Steph's legacy look like, bro?
Yeah, like, I got that written down. I said, if Steph gets ring number five, what does that mean, bro?
And bro,
I don't want to say, nah, I can't go that far and say he's a GOAT of this decade, but he's got an argument. If you get number five, really hurts him is that KD's got the finals MVPs, so did Iggy. So it's like, when your teams were really good winning championships, you weren't really, like, obviously he was dominant, he was doing his thing, but he wasn't the best player on his team, in quotes. But also, like you said, when we're talking to our kids, I think they will understand the reason why you are shooting these three-pointers is because of that man. Like, he really changed the game, bro. And the only unanimous MVP in NBA history. There's a lot of things that you could point to that's like, are we sure that Steph isn't the GOAT of this decade? Yeah. But I still got to give it to LeBron, like what he's done, scoring, rebounding, assisting all over the court. Yeah, I think it's Bron still. But do you think that Curry's the GOAT if he gets?
I mean, so you're saying that he would have won the LeBron decade is what you're saying? Like, because yeah. LeBron's dominant. Okay, so I could maybe see your point, but it's tough. It's tough to take away from LeBron because he had, you know, went to the finals 10 straight times and played against such, you know, good teams and stuff. So, but my thing would be like, he would probably have solidified himself as the best point guard of all time. And he would be easily got to be in the top five discussion of all time when we talk about, you know, best basketball players of all time because he truly changed the game. And I was saying that, like, they won't understand, like, yet, because they'll be shooting threes. But more so, like, the feeling of watching Steph Curry play is what I was trying to get at. Like, watching Steph Curry play, like, yeah, it's a real, like I want to see him live before he retires, bro, because it's just a performance, bro. He's a performer, you know.
It's crazy because before the Olympics, like the end of last season, people were saying, all right, we, like, Steph Curry might be towards the end of his like legacy, mm-hmm. and then even he did his Olympics, went crazy, and people to start this year were saying, all right, the Warriors are done. Steph Curry only has it like here and there, but now he's turned it on, and it's like, I'm still one of them. And that's something I wanted to say about the playoffs is like all these like older guys, Westbrook, Harden, Kawhi, Curry, Bron, like they kind of are giving the keys away, but they're, now that we're in the playoffs, they're still like, nah, like, young fella, still take this backseat. Like, we're still the main attention. We still know what we're doing in this situation.
I think, bro, did you see the stat? Did you hear the stat they said about the Stephen Curry, that for his age, he's averaging the most amount of points for, like, any guard in NBA history?
No, I didn't see
that. So for any guard that's ever been his age in NBA history, he's averaging the most amount of points. Damn. And, like, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm explaining the stat right, but.
Yeah, I got it.
Crazy stat, bro.
That's tough. Yeah. But a little bit more on the basketball side. People were saying like, giving Ime Udoka some like, critique because he didn't stick with the double big lineup with Adams and Sengun enough. But, like, watching the game, I was – like, they went on a little bit of a run, but also they can't do anything on defense with those double bigs because – especially when the Warriors are going, like, that four guard with Curry, Butler, Moody, and Pods. Like, who is Sengun going to guard in that group? Like, you'll stick one of the bigs on Draymond, but everywhere else you could just do off balls and the big is going to get lost and eventually end up on Steph Curry. And also I checked, like, I was looking at two-player lineups, and the double big still had a negative plus minus. So, I mean, it's an interesting philosophy. You go in double big against a small – it's not interesting. It's common sense, like, that's one way to disrupt the small lineup is to go big, but it wasn't working. Like, the eye test might have a little bit deceived us or, like, lied to us a little bit because the stats still say the Warriors were still, like, doing good or better than the Rockets when they had that double big. But the Rockets just can't score, bro. Like,
yeah.
And are you a Jalen Green guy or no?
I think he's a really good player, but, like, to be your 1A, though, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's your, like, best player.
There's just so many times where it's like, Fred VanVleet, what are you going to do? Or Jalen Green, what are you going to do? And they just but against the good teams, there's a lot of questions with that team. So I got the Warriors in five, bro. You say you got seven? I got Warriors in five, so we'll move to the next one. We'll go quick on these next two series. Number two, Celtics versus number seven, Magic. My big thoughts is just, like, without Suggs, there's zero chance. I got the Celtics in four. What you got?
I mean, you know, what's up with JB and JT, bro? What's up, though? His wrist messing with him, JB's knee.
Yeah, that's a fact.
bro, we'll probably win this series in five games, but them C's fans, man, all my C's fans that watch the pod, man, y'all should be worried come second round. If them boys not healthy, bro, Derek White. Hey, Pritchard, they nice, but I don't know if they compete like that, bro. You know what I'm saying? Against the top teams in the East without their two best players.
Not yet.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but definitely, yeah, Celtics in probably four or five for sure.
Another thing is Franz was, like, shooting well, like, the past few years, but his shot looks really bad right now. I don't know what's going on with the player development in Orlando, but his shot's not clicking how it was. It just looks like kind of hitchy coming out of his hands. And, bro, they're starting Corey Joseph, bro. It's just like you're not going to win many playoff games starting Corey Joseph. But I don't think we can go fast on this one because the Nuggets versus Clippers, number four versus five, is such a crazy series. We saw that game two last night as well. But first question, bro, in your opinion, Kawhi is a top what player when he's healthy?
In the NBA or all time?
No, in the NBA right now.
Top eight.
Top eight? So, yeah. So, there's still a clear gap between, like, Tatum and Kawhi or nah?
they play so different. They play so differently, bro. But, I mean, Kawhi, I don't know if it's a clear gap, but it's definitely a gap between the two for sure.
I got you. I was thinking Kawhi better than Tatum when he's healthy, bro, because
what yeah, I was, yeah, 100%.
What up? Oh, so you're saying Kawhi is better?
Yeah, 100%. Oh. Yeah, there's definitely a gap, but I don't know if it's like a ginormous one, though.
No, that's a fact. Bro, 14 for 19 from the field for 37, yeah. Like, that's unheard of. And I was having this conversation, like, whose midi is better, his or Shea's? And I might say Kawhi, bro. When he gets to that spot, it's just none you could do at that point because he's tall, he's strong, and it's just like same shot every single time. You can't bump him off his spot, nothing. But what scared me about the Clippers is they also can't score like well. I mean, Denver's the only team in the playoffs with a like bottom 10 defensive rating, and the Clippers scored 105 and 102, I believe, in the two games. So I'm kind of concerned, like, if they win this, I'm not concerned, I'm happy. But if they win this series and then play the Thunder, like, how are you going to get any points against that defense? But what thoughts you take away from game two and one?
Crazy. It's going to be a crazy series. Love seeing the effort from MPJ yesterday in game two. Mm-hmm. Really took to his coaches, you know, calling him out in the media and took that personal and played his ass off, you know what I mean? And Russell, you know, I'm not a big Russ fan, but definitely got to give him his props in the playoffs so far. He's, you know, he makes some crazy plays sometimes, but sometimes he makes some winning plays.
As a Thunder fan, that's the Westbrook experience, but especially like now towards his career, is you hear in the background?
Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck are they doing? But anyways, like game one hits the three to tie it, basically going to OT, and then they get the ball back and he passes up a wide open three to throw it off the defender's back, no shot. And then like in overtime, he gets a huge offensive rebound, gets the game sealing steal. So you gotta live, like people were mad at Coach Malone. It kind of looks crazy that he was playing Westbrook in the clutch instead of Pickett. But now, like, the intern coach is realizing I'm going to win with Westbrook on the court. So it's just the Westbrook experience you got to live with, the crazy plays like you're saying, but also when he's just in that mold, is like you can't teach that energy or play against that energy if you're not ready to go.
Not at all. And you know, one thing that scares me about the Clippers too, like James Harden has had a phenomenal year for them, but his, you know, you can't ignore his past playoff woes. You know what I'm saying? So you got to think about that. And man, Jokic is tough to deal with, bro. He's just whenever the game was, you know, maybe creeping away from them, Jokic just made the shot.
But Zubac is playing like as good as you can against Joker, because game one, first half, Joker, I was making a joke, but I was saying like Joker shouldn't win MVP just off his performance right now. And then last night, you look at the stats. If you
wait, Shea didn't even play well though in game one. Shea didn't play well in game one though.
Won by 50. What you want?
Yeah, what you mean though? Hold on, bro.
Won by 50, bro. But nah, we don't gotta talk about that. Joker last night, he had a good game, but seven turnovers, like that's concerning. Yeah. So
Norman Powell got to step it up too as well.
Yeah, that's a fact. He had a big shot at the end, but he definitely does. That's part of the scoring that they need if they want to be able to compete for a title.
He was averaging like 21. I know he got hurt at some point during the year. I think after he went on that crazy run in the beginning of the year, but definitely need to see like the pre-All-Star Norman Powell where he was, you know, in the All-Star contention, because that will really help them win some games for sure.
So I'm late for class, but I'll give my prediction. I got Clips and seven. What you got?
Nuggets and seven, man.
Nuggets and seven. All right, so I'm going to have to go through this episode again and look at our takes so we could keep a little friendly competition going. You got me in the college Final Four and March Madness take, so we'll reevaluate after these playoffs or first round concludes. But
that's good. Yeah, I got to – whoever wins, they owe them 20 push-ups. We'll do 20
push-ups? 40. 20. Up it.
40?
All right, bet.
All right, bet. Let's do it. Straight, but, too.
All right, that's valid. that's going to do it for our NBA predictions. Definitely like this episode. Subscribe. Go follow us at 9MD2. Go on TikTok right now. Like, if you made it this far, you might as well just go on TikTok. Go follow 9MD2. We appreciate all the support. And
thanks for tuning in to another episode of 9MD2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.